Welcome back to Silk Flowers and
Paper Mache Hearts. We are your hosts, Eric Hart
and Ashley Flowers. And Eric, how would you describe today's episode?
I think today's episode is very distressing.
It's very distressing, guys.
But I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. As props people, we're constantly distressing items, you know, from paper props to furniture. There's almost everything is distressed all the time, even brand new items. So we thought we would talk a little bit about some tips and some tricks for distressing.
Yeah, I actually heard an art director once say that everything gets some distressing. They're getting brand new items, and even if it's supposed to be brand new in the context of the show, they're still doing some distressing on it, some breaking down, just to make it look lived in and real and an inhabited world.
Yeah, and that's true for even when you're doing a show that's taking place in today's world, and you go to Target or Amazon Prime, you buy these items, they're still going to want something done to them. Mm-hmm. A little adjustment. Maybe they're a little bit too bright of a color on stage, or maybe it looks too brand new. Like you just said, it should be lived in.
Right, yeah. And so I think one of the most important things, before we talk about any techniques, is just the importance of the research, of finding out what actually happens to items as they're used. Coming up with the item's story, you know, like, how is it used, who's using it, where is it being stored, what's the weather, you know, is it outside being stored in the weather, how old is it, how good are people at taking care of things, because you can still, you know, you could have, like, an antique that's been well taken care of, and it may look brand new, even if it's from the 1700s, but there's still little, you know, in the crevices, in the corners, there you could see some semblance of the age and things like that. So, you know, you always want to avoid what I call the Hobby Lobby effect, where you look at this furniture sold at these home goods stores like Hobby Lobby, where they do the faux distressing, and they get they kind of get the look right, but they get like, it'll be the middle of a flat surface of a drawer, suddenly has some paint scraped off, and you're like, what kind of, is there like a merry-go-round in the middle of their room that's only hitting the center of this drawer over and over again? Why is there paint scraped off in the middle of a flat surface and nowhere else? It's like, this is ridiculous. So you definitely, you want to look at like real items and see how they're actually being distressed, and avoid this kind of cartoonish effect
going on. Exactly. My biggest thing is with furniture, when we're distressing furniture and people just think, oh, I'll just take some sandpaper, or I'll take some paint and I'll just do this and go for it. But it's like, well, let's think, where do people place their hands on the back of the chair when they're standing near it? Where do they sit in the cushion? Where do they put their feet on the stretchers? You know, all of those little details will help you make it look more of a honest distress piece than just like, oh, look, we threw some things at it.
Yeah, one of my favorite stories was Lincoln Center. They were doing Brokeology, which was a show. It was a realistic interior, and Danielle Worley was the set designer. And during tech, she's watching the actor in his childhood home, and every time he comes down the stairs, he's running his hand along the banister in exactly the same way. And so during one of the dinner breaks, she ran up and she basically like wore down the line that his finger followed down the banister, because you know, it's the assumption that if he's coming down the stairs exactly the same way every time, then it will be worn down where his finger is like dragging along the banister. So it's like really paying attention to the show and like the actors and where things would be distressed.
That's amazing. So let's get into some tips and tricks.
I mean, so the big thing is like, what material is the prop made out of? And I think a lot of the tips we talk about are wood, because we're usually distressing the furniture. That's going to be the oldest thing on stage. If I'm building a piece from scratch and it's got to be distressed in a certain way, one thing I always do is I still build it perfectly, right? I still build it as if it's new. And then once it's finished, then I start distressing it. I'm not like, I'm not trying to build it so that like it's all warped and, you know, out of square and all this sort of, the joints are loose or anything. Cause it's, I don't know, there's something, it ends up being kind of fake and it's not structurally sound. And it's like, it doesn't tell the right story, because a piece of furniture would have been built new And then it just rests over time. So it's easier to use these techniques if you build it perfectly first and then go and distress it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So how about you? What do you like to do to furniture?
I do a lot of sanding, and I've done, if it's extreme distressing, if I need to take a chisel to it and get some like chunks out of it a little bit. I really do enjoy distressing the fabric on furniture and telling that story. Mm-hmm. Like, was there a stain once upon a time, or is somebody always sitting right in this part? And it's really fun with the upholstery because you can get a little creative. If you're reupholstering something, you can kind of make the cushions lumpy and look like they're older, you know, they're not brand new cushions. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, you can kind of spritz it with maybe a tea dye, some maybe glossy wood tone a little bit, very lightly, depending on how people are interacting with it, just to give it some different coloring and the staining and the weathering of it. Mm-hmm. But I really enjoy doing the lumpiness and cushions and stuff.
So are you like cutting up the foam, or are you putting like random extra bits of foam in, or what are you doing?
I usually add in some batting or just some polyfill. Mm-hmm. To give it some fluffiness instead of altering the actual foam piece itself. Mm-hmm. I guess it kind of goes back to your idea of, you know, make it perfect, then add to it. Mm-hmm. Because in case we were to ever need that piece again, I can just remove the polyfill and reupholster it instead of having to cut new foam and all that jazz. Yeah,
make it nice again.
Yeah, make it party.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't done this, but I've heard other people like suggest it, especially with like couches where you're leaning your head. And so you're imagining somebody's like leaning their oily hair against the couch over and over again for decades. So they like to use like something like glossy wood tone or something with a bit of sheen. So it's like this buildup of oil over time on the fabric kind of thing. Or, you know,
I've never thought about that, about having like your head against
the hand rest or something. So it'll be like worn away on the edges, but then where you're rubbing your hands will have built up this a little bit of a sheen or something.
Ooh, I like that. I've never thought about that. That's so clever.
Something to try.
Yeah. My next adventure.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's the same thing with like metal doorknobs or things like that, where the doorknob itself gets this like super shiny thing, you know, there's no patina there. It's like almost like it's extra polished because the oil's in your hand, and rubbing on it over like decades is actually the same as polishing it. And then the patina itself is in like the cracks and crevices that are never touched.
Yeah. And I know I've seen a lot of people when they do patinas, they'll darken areas that I'm like, well, wait, but people would be touching this area. So if you're touching it constantly and it's a metal, would it actually be this? And they're like, oh, maybe not. And that also goes back to research. If you're not really sure what it would look like distressed, try to look at something that's old online. You know, it's so easy to just Google old silverware, you know, stuff like that, to kind of look how it looks like today and the aging of it.
Yeah, I heard there was a book I was reading about a Hollywood prop master, and one of his great stories was they were down in, I think, Cuba filming a film, and they needed all these street vendors and all their like old pots and pans and things like that. And so it was easy for them to run out and buy like brand new pots and pans, but it was going to be like hours and hours of actually aging it. So they bought all this new stuff, and they went down to where all the street vendors were, and they were like, hey, if anybody wants a brand new pot, let's trade. And so they basically traded it for all the old stuff. And it's like they got just like these brilliantly distressed pots and pans that had seen like years and years of use, and they didn't have to do any of the work.
That's like, pretty clever.
That's a way to save some time.
Right? You're like, here, we'll just do this. I like that. Now, other than furniture and metals, one thing I think people don't think of off the top of their head for distressing is paper props.
Yeah.
Because we do a lot of paper props in our shows, and usually they're old paper. A lot of newspapers, we're always printing newspapers. And even though sometimes they would be clean, a lot of directors and designers have the idea that, oh, we're in an old time, they must look older. And so we're always distressing them and sometimes I use glossy wood tone for even that. Mm-hmm. Just kind of spritz them down or tearing off the edges of the paper.
I use this example in class, but it could be really tricky with paper. I show them this like super beat up piece of paper or this book or something, and it's from like 1990 and it's just been distressed heavily. And then I also show them a book from like the 1400s that's almost still pristine white. And so it's really, really important to know the story of the paper, because you can preserve paper for a long time. And like, you could have a really old book that's still in very pristine condition. But if you don't take care of paper, it could be only like 10 years old and it looks like absolutely horrible, you know, yellow and flaking apart and stiff and all this sort of thing. So that's always tricky. It's like, don't just go by the age. It's like, are they actually taking care of it? Where is it from?
Exactly.
And then the other thing, like you were saying, old shows need old paper. There's always like, oh, it takes place in the 1930s, so that paper will be like yellowed. It's like, no.
And if you're
it's,
like,
it's brand new at the time. They had white paper back then, I promise.
Right. But yet it's not right. And then if you convince them, you get it on stage, and then everybody's like, it just doesn't look right.
Yeah.
You're like, but it's accurate. I did my research.
Just print it on the like off-white paper. Like, fine. You can have it be slightly yellow. Way. I'm not going to burn the edges, though.
That's, too far.
Yeah. That's probably the worst. I know a lot of props people who like despise anybody who burns the edges of paper. It's like, was this in a fire? Because otherwise, it shouldn't be burnt.
Right, I've never done that unless it was supposed to be burned. And even then, I didn't burn it. I tore it and then painted it.
Right. Yeah. it's like you're...
Because if you burned it, it would just flake away.
Yeah. It's like the third grade pirate map class project that you have to do. That's what you do.
Amazing. Yeah, it's interesting. I was at my great grandma's house a couple months ago, and I found this book, and it was an old math book that was from, I think, 1918 or something. And it was definitely older, and it was worn away here and there. But at the same time, I was like, this is still in pretty good condition.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at my mammal and I was like, can I take this? And she's like, you want an old book that's math? And I was like, do you know how awesome research this is?
Mm-hmm.
She's like, okay.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is so cool. I'm like nerding out over an old book because I'm like, look at all of these little things I didn't think about.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's insanity. Tricky. It's tricky with books, like getting it just right. Just the worn edges. Someone we should have on the podcast, Ross McDonald, does a lot of paper props and does a lot of books. And so like his aging process is basically like flipping through the book over and over and over again, because there's not really a way to kind of like automate that or make like there's not a quick way to do that kind of weathering. It's the result of reading it over and over again. So it's just sit there and flip through the books and flip through it and that sort of thing. That's why I like to give, especially like money props, they're always, paper money always needs to be worn down. So I like to give that as early as possible in rehearsal, just so like as the actors use it, it's getting that kind of natural distressing. Like, let them do the work.
Ha ha ha. Now you work for the props department, actor.
Uh-huh. That or I wet it and throw it in the dryer for a few minutes.
Oh, I never thought of that idea.
My apprentice was like, are you laundering money? But yeah,
that's not funny.
Yeah. It's like, I've kept too many dollar bills in my pants pocket to know that this is actually a really great way to distress money.
That's so true.
Oh, so going back to furniture, besides just the general like aging, sometimes you gotta like make something super beat up. So I don't know. Have you ever done the thing where you like take a chain and start beating the furniture, like the tabletop or like a bag of bolts or something, and you just start like slamming on it?
Yeah. And it's great when you know you have to do those projects and you say, okay, I'm going to wait until the day that I need to relieve some stress. And you're like, all right, I'm going to take an hour and I'm going to beat this up real quick and I'm going to be great.
People start coming in because of the noise. You're like, I'm doing a project. This is what I need to do. And they're like, well, why are you yelling at it too? It's part of the process, I promise.
Yeah, there have been many times where I've had to take something to it and hit it over with or throw it on the ground a bit. Not furniture, obviously, because I don't want to actually break the furniture. But even books. I've done that with books, actually. I've thrown them down a bit just to kind of break them up a bit. And it's very, like, cathartic. Mm-hmm. Just like, yeah!
Yeah.
I'm just going to destroy this. All my problems are going to go away. Maybe I'll get drawings tomorrow.
Yeah, and that's a case where I'll do some burning, too, if it really needs to be distressed. Because if you burn the wood, this is before you, like, finish it or stain it or paint it. It's got to be the bare wood. But if you burn the wood and then you, like, take a wire wheel or something to it to get rid of all the ash, because it burns in this weird sort of, like, organic way. And it also, when you have a real pronounced grain, the one part of the grain will burn away a lot more than the other part of the grain. And so when you sort of get rid of the ash, you get that really raised grain appearance that you see in like old timey wood. Like you could feel the grain, you know, you wear it away. So I've done that for some of that super worn out furniture.
I've never tried that. I'll have to try that one day. That's actually pretty clever.
Yeah. And it's pretty fast too. Like just one of those propane torches you get at the Home Depot or something. You probably don't want the oxyacetylene torch because you know, you don't want your table to disappear. You just want it to slightly catch on fire. Just a little bit.
Come back and like, it's fully distressed. What are you talking about?
That and another technique I've tried, I've had a little bit of success. Other people keep saying it's super great, but it's so you take like a piece of steel wool and you dissolve it in vinegar. And you let it sit like overnight and the steel wool will fully dissolve in the vinegar. So then you're supposed to be able to take that solution and paint it on the wood. And so it's like the acid mixed with the iron oxide forces the wood to oxidize and turn like gray, like wood that's been left outside for a long time. And it's kind of worked for me. I don't know. Apparently it doesn't really work with pine. Like you got to use like oak or some other hardwood,
like a hardwood. Yeah,
and like everything I build is out of pine, so it's kind of so then I just, you know, go over it with a dirty wash.
Wow, I'm gonna have to try that. That's very interesting though.
It's kind of fun. It feels like a chemical experiment. You're like, where did the steel wool go?
To be scientists, yeah. We like get our little beakers out and test tubes and safety glasses always.
Boy.
So another way of distressing that many of us know is adding on instead of taking away, which we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. So there's always a lot of paint tricks that you can do and distressing in that manner.
Something I always get designers, when they want to age something, they'll say like, oh, just do the brown dirty wash over it. Just give it this is great. Just give it the brown dirty wash. And like
it's like a universal term.
Yeah, I was actually like, I didn't know what to do because, you know, at first when you work at like big theaters with big scenic art departments, they just kind of have it. You go up to the scenic artists and you're like, I just need like a brown, dirty, water it down brown. And they got some like brown and they'll water it down for you and they'll hand it to you. And then it's like the first time where I was kind of on my own and I didn't have this like stock of paint and everything. It's like, oh, where's my brown dirty wash? I need to get what kind of brown paint do I get? I guess I go to the hardware store and oh, look at all these shades of brown. Which one should I get? There's not like a universal like just brown. It's do I get desert sand or do I get like now do I just water it? Oh my goodness.
Do I add upper to it? What?
Yeah, it was very, very distressing.
That is distressing.
It's like there should just be.
I hope everybody's enjoying our puns as much as we are. We've been waiting all week for these.
Right. I wish there was just like a theatrical supply store that just sold dirty wash.
Dirty brown wash. I'm sure someone should do that.
Like, what is it?
Someone out there, create that. Get rich quick scheme.
Yeah. It's like one of those theater things that just appears. It's like, yep, there's a bucket full of old paint. Every theater has it. Just put it on the props, make them dirty.
That's how you do.
And so when you're adding paint to distress, is there a specific technique that you use when doing that? Or, I mean, I guess it is kind of determined project to project, but is there more of a go-to of like, this is the style I use when distressing wood or something?
Yeah, I'll usually go with the darker, something darker, and start working it in the corners and the crevices and like wiping it off, you know, that sort of thing. Let it collect and sort of get that good. And then if I needed to, then I'll like go in with highlights for the very edges or something. Cause sometimes, you know, instead of sanding the edge to make it look lighter, you could just kind of use a lighter paint and paint it on. So you're not like, you know, wearing away the paint or something. Or if it's like some weird material underneath the paint, you actually don't want to expose that. So usually like every time I've tried doing the lighter color first, it just gets, and it just ends up getting obscured by the dark paint. So I kind of, whatever's lightest, I wait until the last, because it's only going to be little bits.
Yeah, I do pretty much the same thing. I rarely use highlights though. Hmm. I think I've only done that maybe once or twice. But usually because of the items that I'm distressing, I know I can sand away because I know what's underneath it, usually because it's freshly built.
Right.
But I also like to sponge on my browns as well. Mm. I'll sponge them on and then I'll have a dry sponge or partially dried sponge or rag next to me and kind of sponge it and then sponge over that to kind of get some of it off. Mm-hmm. It's very subtle when you look at it, but I've always been very happy with how that looks on kind of like corners of boxes or something kind of branching out a little bit.
Yeah.
It gives it just a little bit more of a character.
And then my like super fast thing I do is just having like a flat black spray paint and just like dusting it from below and like shooting it up at a severe angle or something. And just kind of like, you know, getting it because it's usually when it gets on stage and under the lights, all that nice subtle distressing you've done just completely disappears and it looks like flat and
that spattering boring. Helps.
So it's like just like, you know, getting these broad strokes of like dusted black on it makes it, it looks good under the lights. It looks bad in the shop, but
exactly. Like, great. Don't worry about that it, guys. Fun. Don't worry about it.
Don't look at it. Don't look at it during load-in. Wait until the lights are off.
So another material that we distressed often would be fabrics. Right. And we talked a little bit earlier about upholstery and distressing fabrics on cushions and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But we also distress blankets, napkins, doilies, curtains, etc. And a lot of that is, for me, I'm using a lot of RIT dyes and creating something of that nature to either dip it or spatter it on there, or sponge it in certain sections to look like stains, or, you know, the old-fashioned way of tea dyeing everything, just dipping it in some tea, letting it sit for as long as you need. Those are always good and not quick because you gotta let it dry and such, but it does come out very nice.
Yeah, every giant white lace tablecloth, I always end up having to tee down just because when it's horizontal on a giant table and the light hits it, it's the brightest thing on stage and you gotta tone it down.
Yup.
And then have you ever done the thing where you sew on additional pieces of fabric? So if you want like threads hanging, like a raggedy end, rather than like actually tearing the fabric, which would decrease the structure, you just like take some extra fabric and like sew it on and let those threads hang down?
I have not. I've added like patches to make it look like it was fixed at one point, but I've never added on pieces in that manner. That's interesting. Yeah, I've never done that. I'll have to try that.
Yeah, I know. One of the our Christmas carol that we bring out every year, the costumes were actually distressed. So they keep falling apart and it's impossible for them to fix. And so I know like it's it seems like it would be better to actually add distressed fabric so that the real fabric holding the piece together is not actually falling apart every time they use it.
Yeah. Anytime I have to physically distress a fabric to make tears, holes, or threads coming down or anything, I like to put fray check on it. So it doesn't continue those tears and it'll last a little bit longer.
Right, yeah.
But also depends, you know, is your actor sticking their hand through a hole, you know? And if that's the case, then I try to maybe make a stitching around the hole that blends in, something to kind of give it a little bit more structure. So it's very backwards if you think about it. We get the brand new item, we distress it, and then we fix it, but still make it look distressed.
Yeah.
What a weird job we have.
Yeah. Well, and it was interesting when you said putting patches on fabric, because that's, you know, going way back to the research. That's one more thing to think about is like, this item might have been distressed, but it may also have been repaired throughout the years, and thinking of how to do that and all that sort of thing. I remember it was at a SETC portfolio review for scene designers or something. And it was John Lee Beatty was looking at various sets, and somebody had... I think it was View from the Bridge, and it was so dingy and like distressed and everything. And John Lee Beatty was like, this seems very dirty. You know, poor people still know how to clean, right?
Yeah, right.
It's like, yeah, like, come on. It's like, there's a difference between like, we can't afford to replace this stuff or it gets damaged, versus like, we know how to take care of our things and make them last a long time.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's, like you said, that's why it's so important to be doing the research and have a story for every single prop you're building. Because when you have that story, it's just going to come off more authentic and more real, which is, one, going to look better on stage. Secondly, help the actor feel more within that world. And yeah, it's going to look awesome. Well, guys, thank you so much for sitting with our very distressing episode this week.
Yes.
That's all the time we have today. And so make sure to follow us on Twitter at SilkMache and email us with any questions or ideas for future episodes that you would like to talk about at propspodcast@gmail.com.
And subscribe to us on iTunes. And check out our website at silkflowersandpapermachehearts.com, where you can see all of our old episodes, as well as find our Patreon, where you can support us monetarily. And we'd like to thank our supporter, Jay Duckworth, who has donated enough money to warrant his mention on this show.
Woohoo!
And I believe you also started a Facebook page for the podcast.
Yes, we officially have a Facebook page. Thanks for Jay Duckworth for the recommendation of doing that. And it is Silk Flowers and Paper Mache Hearts. And you can follow us and hear what's going on and listen in on some episodes and get some updates. Should be good.
Cool.
So this has been another episode of Silk Flowers and
Papier-Mâché Hearts with your hosts, Eric Hart
and Ashley Flowers. We'll see you next week.